It's time for this week's edition of Sports Lit 101. What do you have for us this week there, Mr. Pratt?
Well, I have what's going to kick off over the next couple of months, a theme, if you will. When I was in college, I had a professor who later became an advisor to the Navajo Nation. And when we were reading Canyon Dreams and talking to Michael Powell, something that Tom Glenn said to me kept coming back to haunt me. And he kept saying, and this was something Powell addressed too, the thing that's going to hurt Native tribes more than anything else are the culture vultures, is what my friend Tom used to call them. This is long before cultural appropriation became a topic. But people who come with a preconceived notion that American Indian people are X, right? This is what they are. They're like this. They do that. And he said, you know, that is no more true of Indian people than it is of anyone else. Then I remembered something else that my friend Bill Yellowrobe, who is a role member of the Assiniboine tribe and teaches drama at Maine, told me about. He went to the high school which wins all the cross-country and track championships in Montana. And the kids, none of the kids wanted to ever go on to college and run and use their talents. They didn't want to leave the reservation. And one year the coach decided to bring back a whole bunch of former runners. And the kids didn't seem fazed by the fact that most of them were in horrible physical condition or had suffered amputations from diabetes or were alcoholics. And I thought of all those things sort of coming around together, and I thought, you know, we don't have a lot of stories about Native Americans becoming top-notch athletes in America. I mean, we know about Billy Mills, we know about other people, but you don't think of lots of them being in the NFL or lots of them being in the NBA or Major League Baseball. And I began to think, what is it that I don't know about these various cultures, and what do I want to learn about it in terms of sport? Well, I was kicking around in my mind, and the University of Nebraska sent me this book, which is a very short, I think it's like 75, 80 pages, with a lot of pictures about the heavy metal scene on the Navajo Reservation. And it really opened my eyes to something, and that is that we think of music as a generational thing. My parents liked swing and big band, and my dad liked golden era country music, and my mother liked opera and show tunes. Out here, the res metal scene goes from senior elders right down to very young kids. It's been embraced throughout and the Navajo Nation is 35,000 square miles. So this is in nearby towns like Farmington and Gallup, New Mexico, and Albuquerque and the like have big heavy metal scenes. And a lot of the people on the reservation see this as very, very good because it's a family-oriented kind of music with them. Now, that doesn't sound, you know, to those of us who think of Slayer and Metallica and the like. But these bands have great followings, and a lot of kids are taking this up. So I started to think about that, and I started to think about what are the things we don't know about a lot of major league sports and where the people come from. Then what lands on my desk 2 days later, but changing on the fly, Hockey Through the Voices of South Asian Canadians. Then a book called Lakota Hoops about basketball scene in Montana on the reservations. Then I get Invisible Men, Life in Baseball's Negro Leagues, and it's blurbed by Ken Burns. So I started thinking, let's start looking in sort of the corners of sports and see what we find.
I love it. That sounds great.
Yeah, so this I'm going to try and get a copy of the Res Metal documentary and see if we can't get a hold of the people who made it and then talk to them a little bit about what it's like to be filming. I mean, as Molly and Dana told us the other day, it's hard for a lot of whites to remember. These are sovereign nations. They make their own laws for the most part. They can put up a sign that says you can't come here, right? And yet, they can't exist without the outside world. So the tremendous difficulty of maintaining one's culture and then advancing one's economic situation by having to work outside that culture, as we learned about in Canyon Dreams, is really fascinating. And this Res Metal book, I mean, it'll take you, you can read it in an hour or so, really spun my head around when I looked at it. So that's where we're sort of headed in the next couple of weeks, along with the fact that there's a lot of great new sports poetry And if we end up with time, I want to read the short one today. And Joe Bethanty, who, remember, we did East Liberty, his book about a young boy growing up in Pittsburgh in the 60s, who was a former poet laureate of North Carolina, and he spoke with us before. He has a whole group of new sports poems out. So we're going to be also doing some more sports poetry in the winter. I think that'll be a thing to help us get through this, if you will.
That sounds good. Now, will you also be doing your... I think it's an annual thing when you revisit some of your favorites from the year, sort of a book gift buying guide.
Yes, I've been actually starting to work on that, been looking at it. We have a new relationship with Rutgers University Press. The new person who's there has heard about us now, and we don't have to go through the hoops that we had to go through to get their books. So we'll be doing that. There'll be there's a lot of new stuff coming out in Athlon. The new Athlon is almost 400 pages long, with lots of poetry and fiction and a lot of articles that I think may end up being of interest, and the authors may be of interest. And we also, you and I saw a book, Flushed, and we didn't follow up on it until recently, but it was called No Good Game for Boys to Play by Kathleen Bashinsky from Muhlenberg College in Pennsylvania. We're going to get a copy of that. That's about the dangers of youth football. And Dick Crapo recommended to me as one of the best books he's read in a really long time. So that's sort of what's coming up.
Very good.
I thought I would read one quick poem because we know that over in Bethel every year they have a wife carrying contest. You've probably seen that.
Oh, yes.
Well, there's an international one. This is a very short, funny poem by someone named Kirby Olson called Wife Carrying. Strangeness abounds in Finnish towns. Men carry wives who hang upside down. Down the backs of blonde brutes, noses in butt cracks, the women wear helmets in case they are dropped. The Finns lose and lose to Estonians, who train for the event. In the sports museum over in Tallinn, Estonians boast of winning more medals per capita than any other nation. The Finns don't care who wins. It's summer.
Well, I like that a lot.
Yeah, it's really fun. And there's some other really good poems here in this one in Athlon, one that's quite prescient. For people know that Johnny Boychuk had to retire after having a second eye injury. It's a guy who I don't care, you know, who you root for. I'm a Rangers fan. You had to love watching Johnny Boychuk play. Always a really, really good grinding forward. And there's a great poem that will, if we have time, we can do it this week, or we can wait till next week. But about it. And there's one about John Daly. There's a lot of just really good stuff in here. One about a woman watching her husband learning to curl. But a lot of really good sports poetry coming out. And I think it's the absence of live sports that's done a lot for that. Right. I think a lot of people are writing in time when they might otherwise be watching football on television. I'm not really sure.
Well, we've got a little extra time if you want to do one more today.
Yeah, sure. Let me read the Johnny Boychuk one here. It's not too long. It's called Two Arcs, ARCS. It has an epigraph which says, Johnny Boychuk injury. Bruin stretchered off ice after hit into boards. Sporting News, 12/5/13. Two arcs. The online video reruns his crash every 4 seconds from three different angles. Checked hard into the boards, the hockey player crumples, jumps back, and then once more races toward them. I drag my eyes away, read how his teammates help him with the stretcher, how he was conscious, moving his limbs, speaking as I was years ago when I fell backward skating some unambitious figures, testing new blades poorly attached. Not bad to rest an injured head on ice, but staring up at lights, how could I tell if I'd blacked out? There was no instant replay. No steep dive into Leith, but a short dip floating, surfacing into the glare as EMS arrived to brace my neck and check me. No concussion. It might as well have been a coffee nap. You take a long, deep sip of Java, close your eyes till they spring open. Living, the opposite, jars you awake and catapults you into an awareness that tilts towards the end, abruptly or not. into a different sleep. I really liked that poem. I thought that was very thought-provoking.
Yeah, that is wonderful. Who wrote that again?
That is by a woman named Claudia Gary, who wrote that. And she has, I think she has another one here in Athlon as well. They're just some great poems. And you got to be drawn to a poem that says there's no crying in Taekwondo by this Lisa Destiro, which is really good. And there's one about Tiger Woods with the epigraph, "Daddy made some mistakes," is quoted in Time magazine. It's a villain, sort of a villain now. It's really good. But it's, there's just a lot of really good ones in here. And I think that over the next, several weeks, we'll look at one or two a week if we have time.
That's great. Awesome, Bruce. Well, we thank you very much. You'll be hanging around for the rest of the show, right?
I'll hang around for sure.
Fabulous.
I will mute my mic so if I drop something, it won't get in the way, but I'm here.
All right.